Okay, the first thing I should do is I should read out the commentators. I didn't complete yesterday, I just read validated the Vishnu's commentary. But there are some more remarks made by the acharyas from text 2. I had read Vishwanatha Chakravarti and Baladeva Vidya book, but I didn't read the others, so I thought I'd just quickly make some points, whatever points that I'm missing. And then we'll come back to the current verse. The current verse is text 9, but I'll make some points from text 2. Sridhar Swami, on text 7, Karpanya Doshopahata Swabhava. I'm overcome by miserly weakness. So he's explaining what that means. Karpanya Doshopahata Swabhava. Etan Hatva Katham Jivishyama Iti Karpanya. The state of him being in a wretched position or in a miserly position is indicated by Arjuna's concern, his idea that how can I live after killing all my relatives. Doshascha kulakshaya krataha, and the defect that comes out of killing the family, tabhyam upahato abhivuta swabhava, and my nature has been overcome by my miserliness and this defect which is definitely going to come. My nature is characterized by heroism, shauryade lakshana, yasya soham, tvam vrachami, tatha dharme samudham cheto, yasya sah. And I'm completely bewildered about my dharma. Yuddham tyaktva bhikshatanam api kshatriyasya dharmaha adharmava. Is it dharma or adharma for a kshatriya to give up his battle and go and beg? So therefore, I want to become your disciple. Kincha teham shishyaha. Shishyaha means shasanarha. Shishya means I'm subjecting myself to your discipline. Prabhupada explained this point, that shishya means one who's subjecting himself to the discipline of a teacher voluntarily. That is a shishya, that is a disciple. Atastvam prapannam charanam gatam mam shadhi shikshaya. Therefore, please teach me a surrendered soul. Without surrender, there is no possibility of a teacher factually benefiting a student. In Vedic culture, this is a system. Subordinates first of all surrender, then they are taken care of by their superordinates. In Western civilization, they don't have this because their trust has been betrayed so many times. So they find it very, very difficult to surrender to someone. The very concept is irritating to their minds. But in Vedic culture, it's always like that. Before surrendering, one is supposed to examine and discriminate. But once one surrenders, one is supposed to accept. Okay. Then Ramanuja has made some summary remark. He has just summarized the situation. This is what he says. Punaravi partha sneha karanyad dharma dharma bhayakulo bhagavaduktam hitatamam majan anidamavacha. So even though Krishna tells him, Krishna gives him instructions from texts 2 and 3, in text 2 and 3, Krishna actually talks to him. But still, the son of Vrita, he became overwhelmed with affection and compassion for his relatives, and fear of whether it is dharma or adharma. And therefore, he could not, without understanding that the Lord's instructions is most beneficial, he spoke the text beginning, text 4. The instructions of the Lord are most beneficial, but Arjuna didn't get that. Bhishma Dronadikan, Bahuantavyan, Gurun, Kathamaham Hanishyami, Kathantaram, Bhogeshu, Atimatra Saktan, Tan, Hatwa, Tai, Bujaman, Antan, Eva Bhogan, Tat Rudrena Upusichit, Eshu Asaneshu, Upuvishu, Hunji. Bhishma, Drona and others are to be greatly respected. They are my gurus. How can I kill them? And on top of that, having killed them, okay, they may be only interested they may be very attached to such enjoyments, but having killed them, I am supposed to take the facilities which are meant to be enjoyed by them or which are enjoyed by them and sprinkle their blood on them, and on top of it sit on their asanas and enjoy. The idea is they were ruling the kingdom before. Duryodhana, aided by Bhishma, Drona and others. Now the kingdom is going to go to Yudhishthira if they win. So who's going to sit on the throne? Previously the thrones were occupied by Duryodhana. Dhritarashtra was namesake king. And he was assisted by Bhishma, Drona and others. Now what is going to happen? They are going to be overthrown. In place of Dhritarashtra, Yudhishthira is going to be put. And in place of Bhishma, Drona and others, the other Pandavas will be sitting. So he's saying, okay, not only I'm supposed to kill my gurus, on top of that, I'm supposed to enjoy their facilities, whatever facilities they enjoyed, after killing them. And I'm sitting on their seats. How can I do that? Evam yuddham arabhya nivritta vyaparan bhavattaha dhartarashtraha prasahya hanyuhu iti che. But now that the war has begun, the Dhritarashtras, sons of Dhritarashtra, they will kill you. Astu, let them kill. Tad bhadalabdha vijayat, adharmat, asmakam dharma dharmo ajanadbhi taih hananam eva gariha, iti me pratibhati. Okay, let them kill. Because it appears to me that better than the sinful activity of killing them and being victorious, it is better that they kill us because we don't know whether what we are doing is dharma or adharma. So it is much more certain. That's how it appears to me. It is much more certain that at least, you know, why take a risk? Ityuktva yat mahyam shreya iti nishchitam tat sharanagataya tava shishyaya me bruhi iti atimatra kripanaha bhagavat padambujam upasasadam. Having said this, he told the Supreme Lord, whatever is good for me, as ascertained by you, please tell that to your surrendered disciple, tell that to me. So in this way, the most distraught Arjuna, he surrendered at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So that is Ramanujacharya's summary comment. Then Keshav Kashmiri has made a few remarks. Most of his points are taken up by the other commentators, but there are a few points which are worthy. For instance, in his comment to text 4, he points out, text 4, Arjuna is speaking. Arjuna is saying, how can I kill Bhishma and Drona? You know, how can I counter-attack them with the arrows? They are worthy of worship. So, Keshav Kashmiri writes, Bhishmam pitamaham dronam cha acharyam sankhya sangrame aham katham pratyotsyan. How can I counter-attack my grandfather and my acharya in this battle? Na kathamapi ityartha. No possibility. Tatrapi ishubhi. And that also by using arrows. Yabhyam saha vachapi yuddham anuchitam. Even with words, it is not appropriate to engage in a dispute. Kim punah pranaharibhi sharaihi. What to speak of using arrows which actually take away their lives? Kutaha yataha tau pujarhav. Why? Because they are worthy of worship. Duryodhanadivir asmad dharmanashaya puraskritav. They have been placed by Duryodhana and others for destroying our religious principles. Gurum tunkritya vipram nirjitya vadata aranye nirjale sthane sabhave brahma rakshasa. ఇత్యాది శాస్త్రోక్తం గురోర్వచన అవజ్ఞ ఆచరణమపి మహాదోషం జానద్భిరస్మాభి కథం తన్నిధనం కథం తన్నిధన నిమిత్తే యుద్ధే వర్ధితవ్యం ఇతి భావ. The scripture states that that person who disregards his guru or who criticizes his guru or who avahela means, how do you explain avahela in English?
Ignore.
Disrespects. You ignore with disrespect. So one who disrespects and ignores his guru, gurum hu kritya tum kritya, by saying hum tum, why like we say, hey, useless nonsense. One who speaks like that to his guru, or one who simply defeats a vipra simply argues with him. Vipram nirjitya vadata aranya nirjale sthane sabhavet brahma rakshasa. He becomes a brahma rakshasa in a forest where there is no water. So you know, he remembers all this. Therefore he is thinking that this is a very great defect to fight with our gurus. Because they are Mahanubhavas, because they are greatly experienced souls, they are great souls. Even if I go on begging, at least it is not sinful. And because it is not sinful, in my next life I will attain better afterlife. Bhikshita anna annadyati bhoktum shreya paraloka shreyo virodhi papa sparsha abhava mahanubhavatvade eva tesham na avritatvadadi dosha yogaha. Because they are great souls, you cannot reject them the way you normally reject a guru. Because they have controlled their senses, they have controlled their lust, etc. So they are not ordinary people. And then in text 7, he finally surrenders to Krishna. He surrenders to Krishna just as it is stated in the scriptures. In the scriptures it is stated how to surrender to the Supreme Lord. In the Upanishads, Yo Brahmanam Vidhati Purvam Yo Vai Vedamsha Prahinoti Tasmai Tamha Devam Atma Buddhi Prakasham Mukshir Vai Sharanamaham Prapadye. I surrender, I am seeking liberation. So therefore, I surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who has taught lessons to Lord Brahma. And who manifests the Vedas and who is the Supreme Lord and who manifests intelligence with which we can understand Him. Yo Brahmanam Vidadati Purvam Yo Vidyamcha Tasmai Gopayati Sma Krishna Tam Devam Atma Buddhi Prakasham Mukshirvai Sharanam Rajet. Gopala Dapani. It's stated in Gopala Dapani Upanishad that one should surrender to Krishna. Anyone seeking liberation should surrender to Krishna, that Supreme Lord who protects Vedic knowledge, who has taught Brahma in the past. Yetu Krishnam prabhadyante nati mukhyanti manava bhaye mahati magnanam trata nityam janardana. He who surrenders to Krishna, all human beings who surrender to Krishna, they are never bewildered. Lord Janardana is the one who eternally protects people who are drowning in great fear. So there are so many statements which are stated in the scriptures. So Arjuna understands that this is the best process. There are so many ways of dealing with the problems of life, but he understands that this is the best process, to surrender to the Supreme Lord. ఇత్యాది శృతి స్మృతి ప్రతిపాదితాం భగవద్ ఉపసక్తిమేవ సర్వసాధనేషు గరీయసీం మనసి నిధాయ స్వహితాహిత జ్ఞాన కౌశలం విహాయ అండ్ దెన్ హీ గివ్స్ అప్ హిస్ ఇమాజిన్డ్ ఎక్స్పర్టీస్ ఇన్ ట్రైంగ్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ విచ్ ఈస్ గుడ్ ఫర్ హిమ్ విచ్ ఈస్ బ్యాడ్ ఫర్ హిమ్ బ్రహ్మరుద్రాదిభేర్ అన్ అవగత మహిమానం and he surrenders to the supreme lord whose glories cannot even be understood by lord brahma lord shiva and others achintya guna shaktikam who possesses inconceivable qualities and potencies karunya vatsalya adi gunadam who is an ocean of all attractive qualities such as compassion affection swabhakta hitaya vasudeva grihe avatirnam the one who in order to do good to his own devotees has descended ఇన్ ద హౌస్ ఆఫ్ వసుదేవ సాక్షాత్ పరమాత్మ భూతం భగవంతం త్వమేవ శరణం వ్రజామి దెర్ఫోర్ ఐ విల్ సరెండర్ టు యూ ద సుప్రీం పర్సనాలిటీ ఆఫ్ గాడ్ యు ఆర్ డైరెక్ట్లీ ద సూపర్ సోల్ ద సుప్రీం సోల్ హూజ్ అ మైజర్ లోకే తు స్వల్పమపి ద్రవ్య వ్యయం కర్తుం అక్షమ కృపణ A miser is one who cannot even expend a little bit of his acquired property. So that is miserliness. So he is similar, he is put in a similar situation. The other comments are similar to what we already know.
But look,
he is such an exalted hero. He has acquired heroism. He's acquired so much of mystic powers, mystic weapons, blessed by Lord Shiva. He's not an ordinary warrior. He has so many assets. And now when he's supposed to use them for Krishna's mission, he's not using. So therefore he's... Okay, text 9. Today actually we are going to study Mayavad and how it is wrong. Yes.
That word Mayavad, Maya is an illusion. So how can you say what that is? They believe in you personally.
No, they believe that this world is Maya. This world is Maya. And they believe that the personal features of the Supreme Lord are also Maya. We will come to that. Okay, text 9. Sanjay Vacha. Eva muktva hrishikesham gudakesha parantapa na yotsya iti govinda muktva tushni babhuvaha. Sanjay said, having spoken thus, Arjuna, chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight, and fell silent. Dhritarashtra must have been very glad to understand that Arjuna was not going to fight and was instead leaving the battlefield for the begging profession. But Sanjaya disappointed him again in relating that Arjuna was competent to kill his enemies, Parantapa. Although Arjuna was for the time being overwhelmed with false grief due to family affection, he surrendered unto Krishna, the Supreme Spiritual Master, as a disciple. This indicated that he would soon be free from the false lamentation resulting from family affection. And would be enlightened with perfect knowledge of self-realization or Krishna consciousness and would then surely fight. Thus, Dhritarashtra's joy would be frustrated since Arjuna would be enlightened by Krishna and would fight to the end. So this is all Sanjaya's indirect message to Dhritarashtra. That look, he is Parantapa. He is the chastiser of his enemies. He is Gudakesha. He is the master of curbing ignorance and he is surrendering to Hrishikesha, the master of the senses. So This is an indication that Arjuna would be enlightened by Krishna and he's going to fight till the end. 10. Tamuvacha Hrishikesha Prahasanniva Bharata Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Vishidantam Idamvacha. O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna, smiling in the midst of both the armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. The talk was going on between intimate friends, namely the Hrishikesha and the Gudakesha. As friends, both of them were on the same level, but one of them voluntarily became a student of the other. Krishna was smiling because a friend had chosen to become a disciple. As Lord of all, he is always in the superior position as the master of everyone. And yet the Lord agrees to be a friend, a son or a lover for a devotee who wants him in such a role. For a devotee who wants him in such a role means for a pure devotee who wants him in such a role, not for an impure devotee. But when he was accepted as the master, he at once assumed the role and talked with the disciple like the master with gravity as it is required. Gravity means seriousness, soberness. You see, the spiritual master is very sober. Pankajangri Prabhu, we asked him, how was Prabhupada dealing with the disciples here in Mayapur? And then Pankajangri Prabhu, he said, Prabhupada was very sober, like a perfect Diksha Guru, sober. He would not let you deal with him lightly. Prabhupada was always strict. So Prabhupada was very strict and grave. So like that, Krishna is also very grave. You see, Krishna has taken the role of a guru. This is the role of a guru. It is a role. The moment one becomes a guru for benefiting others, he cannot be the way he normally is. He has to immediately become very, very conscious of his position and be very strict with disciples. Putram cha shishyam cha tadayet natulalayet. One should lalayet in English. One should not pamper. One should not pamper one's son or one's disciple. One is meant to correct their faults. They may not like it. They have to correct their faults. Putram cha shishyam cha tadaye natulalaye. And we will see that that's the first thing Krishna does to Arjuna. It appears that the talk between the master and the disciple was openly exchanged in the presence of both armies so that all were benefited. So the talks of Bhagavad Gita are not for any particular person, society or community, but they are for all, and friends or enemies are equally entitled to hear them. He spoke the Bhagavad Gita in the presence of everyone. Now Krishna was smiling because a friend had become a disciple. Had chosen to become a disciple. Usually, we cannot instruct friends. The nature of a friend is he is sometimes your guru and sometimes your disciple. But teacher-student relationship is not like that. Or rather, here it is more than that. Here it is a guru-shishya relationship. Here Krishna is becoming the guru and Arjuna is becoming the shishya. So this is very, very serious. Very sober relationship. Eleven. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Ashochyan Anvashocha Stvam Pragyavadamsha Bhashyase Gatasuna Gatasumscha Nanashochanti Pandita. The Bhagavad Gita properly begins now. The Supreme Personality of God had said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. The Lord at once took the position of the teacher and chastised the student, calling him indirectly a fool. Immediately, In his lectures, Prabhupada says, the first thing that Krishna does is he chastises him, saying, you're a fool, you're wrong, you're not an intelligent person. And therefore in Vedic culture, before one accepts studentship, one carefully examines whether he will be capable of accepting the chastisement and discipline that comes with Guru-Shishya relationship. Otherwise one is not, generally one is very reserved. But the moment you accept, you say that, like Arjuna is saying, Shishyasteham, I'll become your disciple, I'll subject myself to your discipline and your chastisement. Therefore Krishna has taken it up. The Lord said, you are talking like a learned man, but you do not know that one who is learned, one who knows what is body and what is soul, does not lament for any stage of the body, neither in the living nor in the dead condition. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Means, those who are wise lament neither for the living stage of the body nor for the dead stage of the body. As explained in later chapters, it will be clear that knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. Wisdom or knowledge means you know matter, spirit and the controller. Matter is jada and the spirit refers to jiva samoha. All the living entities, the category of living entities and Ishwara, the controller. So if we can understand these three correctly, then it is said that you are a wise person. So such a wise person will not lament whether the body is living or the body is dead. That is the point. Arjuna argued that religious principles should be given more importance than politics or sociology. But he did not know that knowledge of matter, soul and the supreme is even more important than religious formularies. So now this is another level of Shastra, Moksha Shastra. We will come back to this. But I mentioned that Arjuna had correctly assessed that higher than Arthashastras are Dharma Shastras. But now Krishna is pointing out that Jnana Shastras or Moksha Shastras are higher than Dharma Shastras. The scriptures which propound liberation, they point out the difference between the soul, the Supreme Lord and the living entities and the necessity for liberation. And the necessity for not being bewildered by material phenomena. So they are Jnana Shastras, or sometimes they are referred to as Moksha Shastras. So they are superior. So Krishna is pointing out that Arjuna's understanding is lower and his understanding is higher. And because he was lacking in that knowledge, he should not have posed himself as a very learned man. As he did not happen to be a very learned man, he was consequently lamenting for something which was unworthy of lamentation. The body is born and is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. So the body is destined to die. So what is the point of crying over something which is destined to die? It's like, for instance, suppose I am given a mobile phone and I am given an account and they give me some, they give me, let us say I am given 300 hours talk time. That means I can use it for 300 hours. But that comes with an expiry date for 1 month. So suppose on the last date I start crying, my account is closing. But on day one they told you the account is going to close in 1 month. It is 30 day validity. So on the 30th day it will expire. It is going to expire. So instead of lamenting, you do something about it. You want to extend the validity, do something. You go, recharge. You do something. You don't want the phone, give the phone to somebody else. Do something. Don't simply just lament. So that is the point. The body is destined to be vanquished today or tomorrow. So therefore, why lament? This is the point. Because it comes with an expiry date. The body comes with an expiry date. Therefore, the body is not as important as the soul. Now, the soul does not die. And that is another reason. So the soul is never going to die. So then why lament about that? The body is definitely going to die. So why lament about it? The soul is definitely never going to die. So why lament about it? So he's pointing this out. One who knows this is actually learned. And for him there is no cause for lamentation, regardless of the condition of the material body. 12. Natvevaham jatunasam natvam neme janadhipah nachayvana bhavishyama sarve vayamatah param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be in the Vedas, in the Katha Upanishad, as well as in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad. It is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the maintainer of innumerable living entities in terms of their different situations according to individual work and reaction of work. The idea is Krishna maintains the innumerable living entities considering their the activities which they have done and the reactions which they are undergoing and how they are reacting to the reactions. Krishna is maintaining all living entities but corresponding to the activities they do. In other words, if I do some sinful activity, then I am subjected to, after I die, corresponding to the sinful activity, for each sinful activity there is a specific type of reaction. So then I go to hell, I suffer, then I am given a particular animal body. Now even when I am put in the animal body, Krishna is taking care of me. He ensures that my body is preserved. But corresponding to my karma, corresponding to the activities which I have done, He takes care. It is not that taking care does not mean Krishna makes every human being rich, like Bill Gates. That is not the point. He takes care of everyone in terms of their different situations according to their activities and the reactions of work. According to that, that's how Krishna takes care. That Supreme Personality of Godhead is also, by His plenary portions, alive in the heart of every living entity. That Supreme Personality of Godhead has expanded into His plenary portion known as the Super Soul. And because the Super Soul is present in innumerable bodies of innumerable living entities, He appears to be many. And therefore Prabhupada says, by His plenary portions, plural. But it's the same personality. Only saintly persons who can see within and without the same Supreme Lord can actually attain to perfect and eternal peace. Now, that paragraph is actually an explanation of the shloka that comes after that. Usually, Prabhupada has the habit of putting a shloka and then he gives a translation or an explanation. But here, he has given the explanation first and then he has given the shloka. Nityo nityanam chetanashchetananam eko bahunam yo vidathati kaman tamatmastham yen upashyanti dhiras tesham shanti shashvati netaresham. So this is the Vedic truth about the Lord and the living entities. So there is one eternal Lord, there are many eternal living entities. Nitya chetanaha, nityanam chetananam. One eternal Lord, and there are one conscious being is maintaining all the other conscious beings. There is one eternal conscious living entity who is maintaining the innumerable other conscious entities. Eko bahunam yo vidathati kaman. He is supplying to them their necessities. One who knows that, so those sober people who can see Him within and without, tesham shanti shashvati netaresham, they attain eternal peace. Na itaresham, the others don't attain eternal peace. So unless we get to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unless we see Him face to face, we will not attain eternal peace. The same Vedic truth given to Arjuna is given to all persons in the world who pose themselves as very learned, but factually have but a poor fund of knowledge. The Lord says clearly that He Himself, Arjuna, and all the kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their conditioned and in their liberated situations. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the Supreme Individual Person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associate, and all the kings assembled there are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past. It is not that they will not remain eternal persons. Their individuality existed in the past, their individuality will continue in the future without any interruption. Therefore, there is no cause for lamentation for anyone. See, the idea is, we were individuals in the past. We are individuals now. And we will continue to be individuals in the future. Now, this seems so simple. So, what is the necessity of writing so much about this? Point is, the Advaitavadis, the Mayavadis, they have a different idea. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence, is not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. See, the Advaitavadis, their theory is as follows. Like Shankaracharya says, Deha Bhedanuvritya Bahuvachanam Na Atma Bheda Viprayena. When we see there are so many living entities, in reality, there are not really so many living entities. There are so many bodies, but there is only one soul. There's only one God inside all the different bodies. And we are all that God. Just like, there are various concepts they use to explain this. Suppose you have the sun. There's only one sun. But if you have different pots of water, then you see so many reflections of sun. So it appears there are so many suns. But in reality, there's only one sun. The moment you remove the water, all these imaginary suns will disappear. And you come back to the reality. The reality is there's one sun. Similarly, right now you are thinking that there are so many jivatmas and you are all servants of Krishna. It is all illusion. Because the jivatmas, they are all the reflected suns. The subtle body is like the water. When there is linga bhanga, when the subtle bodies are dissolved, that can only happen when you attain liberation. So when you have liberation and your subtle body also disappears, then the jivatma also disappears. And then you realize that you are Krishna. Not really Krishna. You realize that you, Krishna, are all that one sacred, amorphous, impersonal, absolute truth. You're all God. So that is why they keep saying this Maya. This Maya, Maya, Maya. So this, according to the Mayavadis, our being individual and all that is just it's just superficial. We are not really individuals. We are all one God. And they have different theories to explain it. One theory was the theory of reflection, which I explained. Another theory was the theory of space. See, suppose this is one space. But suppose you bring in many pots. Then the space inside that pot is called the space inside the pot. Ghatakash. When you break that pot, then what happens? That space does not expand and become the big space. It has always been the big space. So you realize that it is the same. Or another explanation they used to give. Yes, suppose you are dreaming. And in your dream you are talking to so many people. In your dream. In reality, it is not that in the dream the personalities you are talking to, in their bodies, there is a soul. It's not that there are so many sajiva vyaktis. There are not, you know, like suppose I'm dreaming. I'm dreaming that I'm going on a war and I've killed 10,000 people in my dream. Only I have a soul inside my body. I'm the jiva, you know, I am there. But I'm killing so many people. Okay. Now the people I'm killing, they don't have jivatmas. It's just a show. Dream means it's like a cinema. There's no reality.
So this is another concept they had. That in reality there are not many living entities, there's only one living entity who's dreaming up everything. So this whole world is one dream. But if you ask the question, who is dreaming, which soul is dreaming, I am dreaming, or you're dreaming, or he's dreaming, who's dreaming? Then they say, na vyavasthitam, that is not determined. That is difficult to say, who is dreaming, but it's a dream. So they had different ideas that, they came up with various ideas. Mayavad was, it's been going on for thousands of years, but it became very much prominent when Shankaracharya pushed it through. Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva, and under the instruction of Lord Narayan, he pushed it very much. So through various explanations, he bewildered people. He had to do that to bring in people who were influenced by Buddhism to accept Vedic authority. So he spoke teachings which are very similar to their theory. So the Mayavadi theory is that after liberation, the individual soul, separated by the covering of Maya or illusion, will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence. It's not supported herein by Lord Krishna, the supreme authority. But if you notice in this shloka, it is very clear. Never was there a time when I did not exist. So the supreme personality of Godhead always existed. Nor you. There was never a time when Arjuna, who is a living entity, nor all these kings, these are all living entities. There was no time when they did not exist. That means they always existed. Nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. That means the Supreme Personality of Godhead was in the past, He is at present, and He will be in the future. The innumerable living entities were there in the past, they are in the present, and they will be in the future. So there's no room for invoking all these crazy Mayavadi concepts. Because Krishna is very, very clearly stating that, look, I always existed. And I will continue to exist. Even after liberation, I'll continue to exist. Even after liberation, you will also continue to exist. That's why he's speaking for the future. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. Krishna clearly says herein that in the future also the individuality of the Lord and others, as it is confirmed in the Upanishads, will continue eternally. This statement of Krishna is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. Now you may say, Krishna is speaking, Krishna has his Bheda Drishti. He is perceiving the difference between himself and the living entities. Very obviously he's talking like, look, I am different, you are different, these kings are different. Obviously he's having a Bheda Drishti, that I am different, you are different. Now according to Shankaracharya's followers, the liberated soul has no Bheda Drishti. He sees everything as one. Everything as one. He himself and others, they are all one soul. They are all one Brahman. But here, Krishna is speaking difference. He's talking difference, that there's a difference between you, me and these kings. He's invoking difference. Does it mean Krishna is not a liberated soul? Not liberated? No, it cannot be, because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. This statement of Krishna is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. If individuality were not a fact, then Krishna would not have stressed it so much even for the future. The Mayavadi may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual but material. The idea is, the Mayavadis, they interpret the shloka to mean that even though Krishna is speaking as if he is different from all these souls and Arjuna, that is only from the material perspective. They have three levels of perspective. Let me write this down.
Paramarthika. That's the highest level. Vyavaharika. Conventional. pratibhasika. Superficial. Or
actually these words, they signify certain Mayavad concepts and they're difficult to translate in English. I'll explain. Pratibhasika refers to consciousness of something which is actually false. For instance, in a dream, that perception is actually false. Or when you see a mirage in a desert and you think that's water, that can also be interpreted to be pratibhasika. Vyavaharika refers to conventional, you know, we conventionally, we see, we talk, you know, we talk so many things and we see using our gross senses. And this is vyavahar. This is usage, regular usage. So vyavaharika. That is a higher level of reality. In fact, according to Mayavad, there are three levels of reality. This is directly taken from Buddhism. And Madhva has demonstrated it in one of his writings called Tattvodyota. So anyway, the lowest level of reality, according to this Mayavad concept, is Pratibhasika. Higher than that is Vyavaharika. And higher than that is Paramarthika. Paramarthika is spiritual. So on the spiritual plane of reality, there is only one Brahman, impersonal Brahman. So there are three platforms. So when Krishna is speaking that, he's pointing out that I, you, these kings, he's obviously talking of differences. But they say, oh, those differences are Vyavaharika. Those differences are not Paramarthika. They're not really, really, really different. It's just conventional. You talk like that. Krishna is talking like that. He's talking as if there is a difference between himself and all these people. But the reality is they are all one. But he has realized it and we haven't yet realized it. So even though there's only one impersonal Brahman, one soul, Krishna has realized it, but we haven't realized it. If individuality were not a fact, then Krishna would not have stressed it so much, even for the future. The Mayavadi may argue that the individuality spoken of by Krishna is not spiritual, but material, Vyavaharika. Even accepting the argument that the individuality is material, then how can one distinguish Krishna's individuality? Krishna affirms his individuality in the past and confirms his individuality in the future also. Okay, you can say the living entities, the kings, their differences may be Vyavaharika. How are you going to substantiate that Krishna's individuality is also Vyavaharika? How can you say that? Krishna affirms his individuality in the past. He says, I always existed, I never did not exist. And he says, I'll never not exist in the future. So he's confirming his individuality in the future also. He has confirmed his individuality in many ways. And impersonal Brahman has been declared to be subordinate to him. In chapter 14, text 27, Krishna will say that the impersonal Brahman is subordinate to me. I am the foundation of the impersonal Brahman. I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. Krishna will actually say this. So, if the impersonal Brahman, which is beyond matter, beyond the three modes of material nature, is subordinate to him, then how is it possible that he is also material, he is within the system, within the material system? One who is within the material system, you can say, is in the Vyavaharika platform. In their concept, Vyavaharika and Pratibhasika are material. Paramarthika is spiritual. That's why in India commonly also they will talk, Paramartha Jeevan, means spiritual life. Whereas Vyavaharika and Pratibhasika are material. You cannot say that Krishna's perception that he is different from Arjuna is Vyavaharika. That is wrong. Because Krishna is the foundation of the impersonal Brahman, which is beyond the material system. If you look at chapter 14, you open chapter 14 and you see the last portion of chapter 14. 14 point You can look at 14.21. Have a look at 14.21. Arjuna Vacha. Kairlinga is Trin Gunane Tan Atito Bhavati Prabho. Kimachar Katam Chaitam Strin Gunana Tivartate. Arjuna inquired, "Oh my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior? And how does he transcend the modes of nature?" Okay. So he's asking, what are the symptoms by which one is known who is transcendental to these three modes of material nature? What is his behavior? How does he transcend the modes of nature? According to all commentators, including Shankaracharya, there are three questions posed here. The first two questions are answered in texts 22 to 25. And from 26 onwards, Krishna is answering the third question. Okay, look at 22 to 25. I'll only read the translation. The Supreme Personality of God had said, "O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of material nature." So these are symptoms by which you know somebody has transcended the three modes, and this also gives you an understanding of his behavior. Now Arjuna's third question was, how does he transcend the modes of nature? And here is the answer. Text 26. Mamcha yovyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature and thus comes to the level of Brahman. Notice, saha gunan samatitya etan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. Having transcended or transcending the three modes of material nature, he comes to the Brahman plane. Comes to the Brahman plane, the plane of Brahman. So now, this platform of Brahman is beyond the three modes of material nature. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. It is beyond the material system. Because he's out of the three modes of material nature, he's beyond Brahman. Then look at 27. Brahmano hi pratishtaham amritasya vyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukasya ikantikasya cha. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. And he is the foundation, he is the rest, he is the basis of that impersonal Brahman. So if the impersonal Brahman that is spoken of here is itself beyond the three modes of material nature, beyond matter, and he is the foundation of that Brahman, then how can he be within the closed system? If the impersonal Brahman is beyond the Vyavaharika plane, the three modes of nature, everything is from Vyavaharika down. So if the impersonal Brahman itself is beyond the Vyavaharika plane, it is on the Paramartha platform, Paramarthika platform, and Krishna is the basis of the impersonal Brahman, Krishna is also on the Paramarthika platform. So if Krishna is on the Paramarthika platform, that means he is not affected by Maya. That's what it means. That means Krishna's perception is accurate. Krishna's perception is not contaminated by Maya. That's what the whole point is. The whole point is this. Krishna's perception is not contaminated by Maya. And therefore what Krishna is saying is actually true in the literal sense. It is not true in some conventional sense. It is true in the literal sense. See, conventionally we talk so many things which are not literally true. Like for instance, suppose I'm late for a meeting and they're calling me for the meeting. I say, "Yeah, I'm coming." And then they call me again and I'm saying, "Yeah, I'm coming." Then finally, when I'm actually finished with my work and I'm about to come, then I may say, Yes, he says, you know, you start your meeting, you know, I'm just getting onto a bike and I'm flying there. This is just conventional. This is not literal. We talk like that. We talk like that. Normally we talk like that. So, conventional doesn't mean it's literally true. Vyavaharika doesn't mean it's literally true. That is why sometimes it is described, there is tattvika and vyavaharika. Tattvika means true. Literally true, it's actually true. So what Krishna is speaking here is really true, it is tattvika. It is true, it is paramarthika, it is true. There is a real difference between him and the living entities in the past and present and future. Under all circumstances there are differences. Even whether you are in bondage or in condition or in liberated position, you are different. See, this is the very first thing Krishna is teaching. The very first thing Krishna is teaching is we are different. We are qualitatively one, but quantitatively we are different. We are different. That is a very important point. Krishna has maintained spiritual individuality all along. All along the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna maintains spiritual individuality. If he is accepted as an ordinary conditioned soul in individual consciousness, then his Bhagavad Gita has no value as authoritative scripture. See, suppose you say that he is caught up within the Vyavaharika plane. That is why he is seeing the difference. Then what is the value of such a Bhagavad Gita? What is the value of a person who is contaminated? A common man with all the four defects of human frailty is unable to teach that which is worth hearing. The Gita is above such literature. No mundane book compares with the Bhagavad Gita. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. So you cannot say that Krishna is in the process of being liberated. This is another idea they have. The idea is Krishna is a Jivan Mukta. He's not a Videha Mukta, he's a Jivan Mukta. Jivan Mukta means, in the Shankarite concept, he's still seeing differences. But he knows theoretically that the differences are false. The example that they used to give is, there's a certain eye defect by which you see double objects. I don't know what they refer to this in allopathic medicine. Dvichandra Pratiti. So suppose you look at the moon, you see two moons. It is because of an eye defect. You see two moons, two children. So then, you know that actually there is one moon, but you are seeing two moons. So like that, these people, they say, Krishna, he knows that actually he, Arjuna, the kings, they are all one. But he's still seeing it. By Bhadita Anuvritti, he's still seeing it. It is not the effect of his perception has not, of his material perception has not ceased. But when he becomes fully liberated, then he will see. When he's fully liberated, then he will realize that it's all one unitary plane of consciousness. But right now, he's on the way. No? So right now, he's still seeing. So, if you say like that, then you are making Krishna into just another conditioned soul. You know, he may be a deluxe conditioned soul, but he's still a conditioned soul. So that is why Prabhupada is saying, no, you cannot accept Krishna like that. When one accepts Krishna as an ordinary man, the Gita loses all importance. The Mayavadi argues that the plurality mentioned in this verse is conventional and that it refers to the body. So now the Mayavadi argues that no, there is actually one Atma only. There are not many Atmas, but there are many bodies. And because there are many bodies, Krishna is talking about them as if there are so many different people. So many kings and Arjuna. But they are all different bodies. There may be so many different bodies, but there is actually only one Atma. But previous to this verse, such a bodily conception is already condemned. After condemning the bodily conception of the living entities, how was it possible for Krishna to place a conventional proposition on the body again? The idea is, look at the previous text. The previous text, This text number 11. Gatasun agatasumshin anushochanti pandita. Those who are wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. So the idea is, he's pointing out that you know, and also he said, Ashochyan anushochastum. You are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. You are mourning for these people's death. So you are thinking that they are the bodies. So he's pointing out that, Prabhupada is pointing out that he just criticized Dehatma Buddhi, the idea that the body is the soul, and giving so much importance to the body. Immediately after criticizing that concept, why is he going to repeat the same concept again? If that's what is in Krishna's mind. Therefore, individuality is maintained on spiritual grounds. Therefore, individuality is maintained on spiritual grounds, not on material grounds. So we are spiritual individuals. And is thus confirmed by great acharyas like Sri Ramanuja and others. So it is confirmed by great acharyas like Ramanuja Acharya. Ramanuja Acharya has written an elaborate comment on this, which we will see. If we have time, we will read today, otherwise we will read tomorrow. But his comment is very important. In fact, in his explanation of the Gita, he has only written an elaborate commentary in two places. One is his comment to this shloka, where he brings out the Mayavadi ideas and he refutes them. And in chapter 13, Kshetragyam Chapi Mam Vidhi, 13.3 in our edition. So these are the only two places where he elaborately sets out the Mayavadi ideas and refutes them. So it is important to examine what he is saying. It is clearly mentioned in many places in the Gita that this spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. So the spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. Bhakti amam vijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. Chapter 18. Only by devotional service can you understand me as I am. Yatum drashtum tatvena praveshtum cha parantapa. And you can know me, you can see me, etc. In chapter 11 also he said, Bhakti aham ekaya grahya aham evam vidorjana yatum. There also he says, in the 11th chapter also he says, only by devotional service can you understand me as you have seen me. He just showed the Vishwarup and then he showed his own superior spiritual form. And then he said, only by devotional service can you understand me as I am. In chapter 13 also he said, Madbhakta etad vigyaya madbhavaya upapadyate. Only through devotional service to me can you understand the difference between the living entity, the body and all that. And the difference between the two categories of living entities. So, and there are other places also. That is why Prabhupada is saying, it is clearly mentioned in many places in the Gita that this spiritual individuality is understood by those who are devotees of the Lord. Those who are envious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead have no bona fide access to the great literature. The non-devotee's approach to the teachings of the Gita is something like that of a bee licking on a bottle of honey. One cannot have a taste of honey unless one opens the bottle. So, like for instance, Mayavadis, academic scholars, these people, they can never understand what the scriptures are teaching. They can never understand Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. Because they are not opening the bottle of honey. They cannot have an experience of this. So simply by examining the outward covering of a bottle, by sitting on the label of honey, or sitting on the glass, and just by poking that glass, honeybee will never be able to experience that honey. So simply by looking at some book and analyzing it textually, or it appears this type of Sanskrit, evolved maybe 1400 years back, and that type of Sanskrit as it comes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it must have evolved much earlier than that. And they're doing all this textual analysis. These people can never understand what the book is saying. They can never, they are barred access. They can never get it. Because their way of analysis is external. So unless one opens the bottle, one is not given access to it. So Mayavadis, academic scholars, these people, they can never understand what is going on. And they will forever, they will be bewildered. They have been bewildered, they will be bewildered. Unless you surrender to the teaching that is given there, you will ever be bewildered. It's like when a doctor gives you a prescription. A competent, bona fide doctor gives you a prescription. And tells you, take this medicine, go to the drugstore, take this medicine, and you'll be cured. You can understand the meaning of his prescription only by taking what he's saying. But instead of taking it, if you start doing handwriting analysis of the prescription, and if you start analyzing, oh, where is this paper printed? Which press it was printed? What is the pen he used with which he to write this prescription? Where did he buy this ink? What is the chemical composition of the ink? What is the type of language that he uses here? Are there any spelling mistakes in this? If you start, this is irrelevant analysis. Irrelevant analysis. It is exactly like this. Like a bee licking on a bottle of honey. So this whole Mayavadi mental irrelevant analysis and non-devotee academic scholars analysis of scriptures, they also study so much. Mayavadis are very learned. In Bengal there are so many Mayavadis who have studied Chaitanya Charitamrita. They studied Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, of course, for children now, everybody knows it. They'll quote shlokas like this. And similarly, there are so many non-devotee academic scholars. They know so much, they know. Thorough scholars. The fellow has not even one iota of belief in it. He doesn't believe what he knows. And therefore, Prabhupada is saying, the non-devotee's approach to the teachings of the Gita is something like that of a bee licking on a bottle of honey. One cannot have a taste of honey unless one opens the bottle. Unless you open the bottle and you actually take it. Similarly, the mysticism of the Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees, and no one else can taste it, as it is stated in the fourth chapter of the book. In the fourth chapter of the book, it is stated by Krishna that you are my devotee and my friend, and therefore I am teaching you this. So only when you become a practicing devotee, only then you will be given access to it. Otherwise, you will be just like this honeybee. Or like the prescription analyst. And you can go on analyzing till you die. And because anyway you don't believe the prescription, you can write volumes on that prescription. So you can take one prescription, you can sit with other patients with other prescriptions and analyze them. Look at the handwriting. He wrote the T like this, he wrote the T like that there, and he used a different paper. The printing is different. Like for me, he gave me in blue ink, for you, he gave in dark blue ink. The paper is slightly different. You know, your paper is thicker, my paper is thinner. So you can analyze all these things. These non-devotee academic scholars, they're wasting their time and everyone else's time with all this. Basically, what they want to do is they want to save the devotees. They're like the person who's catching the patient and saying, hey, don't take the prescription and go to a drugstore and buy the medicine. First of all, analyze it. Study it. Come. We will all sit together, we will form an association of prescription analysis association. We will all sit down and analyze. We will do comparative analysis. We will study the paper quality. We will study the chemical composition of the ink. We will study first. And we will spend 60 years studying it. In the meanwhile, your disease may become bigger and bigger. It doesn't matter. Because anyway, the prescription is bogus. So this is what these people are. Basically, their idea is, these sacred texts from India, they are very interesting. They are the greatest products of India's creative minds. They are the greatest products. This is the height of human evolution. So Indians are very, very, because it was a very hot climate, Indians used to think a lot. And therefore they wrote such fantastic moral books for the security of their communities, like the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, and Bhagavad Gita. It's simply fantastic. Nobody has written fiction like Mahabharata. Impossible. greatest fiction on the planet. Oh, wonderful. Brilliant. These academic scholars, they really glorify many of India's writings. Brilliant. Bhagavad Gita, brilliant. There are some scholars who think the Bhagavad Gita was only 45 shlokas and the others were added over time. And this they've understood by studying the Kashmirian recension. There are some others who say it's not 45, there are some 745 shlokas in the different shlokas. So these people are basically what are they telling? If they come across a devotee, basically they're telling, don't listen to the prescription, okay? Krishna may say manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mavanasu. Don't do it. First study. Why you need to believe it? You study it. You don't need to believe it. You study it. You analyze it. Examine it. So this is what is going on. Similarly, Mayavadis also. There are so many Mayavadis. It's not that the Mayavadis don't know what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke, what Ramanujacharya spoke. There are some Neo-Advaitins, you know, who even translate and publish Vaishnavacharya's writings, like Ramanuja's writings. You know. They even print them. So, yeah. Very nice it is. Very interesting. Very nice. At the lower level, at the Vyavaharika level, you should read these books. At the Vyavaharika level, you should read Chaitanya, what is that? Shankarayar Moth, Chaitanyayar Poth. That the actual, when it comes to philosophy, it's Shankaracharya. But when it comes to the means, how do you attain that oneness with impersonal Brahman? That is through Chaitanya's methodology. Because Shankara is talking to intelligent people, Uttamadhikaris. Whereas if you have all these Mandadhikaris, useless, dull-headed people, they should chant Hare Krishna. These dull-headed people, they should chant Hare Krishna, they should worship Krishna. It's like in Chennai, one of the Mayavadi sannyasis came and he saw the deity being worshipped. We have Rukmini, Satyabhama, Krishna and Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra, deities there. It was many years back. So he saw the deities and then he came and told the devotees, I'm very, very happy that you are all worshipping me very nicely. So they encourage. They tell you that you should chant. Yes, you should chant. Chant Hare Krishna. You should serve your guru. Follow Chaitanya. Very nice. Yes, Chaitanya is Krishna himself. What is the problem with all this? Everything is inside the Vyavaharika plane. No, it's inside the Vyavaharika box. So we have no problem. Ultimately, it's the impersonal Brahman. So they will even teach these books. They'll encourage you to buy these books. They'll encourage you to read. But just don't take it seriously when they're criticizing Mayavad and all that. Because at the lower plane, they think like that. They think that the truth is wrong. The truth about Advaitavad is wrong. They're thinking like that. But you should forgive them because neophytes often make mistakes. So at a lower plane, just like a grihastha may criticize a sannyas ashram. Because he's neophyte, he's grihastha, he's attached to his wife, he's speaking like that. So he may be imagining that his ashram is the highest ashram. But when he matures up, in his maturity he will accept that sannyas is the highest ashram. So like that, when you are immature, you may be a Vaishnava, that's fine. It's good for you. Because at least you are following the Veda, it's good. At a lower level you should follow something. It's like, it is better to be a grihastha than to be a sinful man. So like this, better to be a Vaishnava than to be a non-Vedic follower. So be something, okay. And then eventually, gradually when you are mature, you will come to the point, you will understand that it's all one. It's the impersonal Brahman. So they will also think like that, they will also encourage you to read all these books. They will also tell you all these things. So the non-devotee academic scholars, they speak like this. The non-devotee Mayavadis, they also speak like this. Because they don't have an experience of the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, they don't know what they're talking. That is why Prabhupada is saying, the mysticism of the Bhagavad Gita can be understood only by devotees, and no one else can taste it, as it is stated in the fourth chapter of the book. Nor can the Gita be touched by persons who envy the very existence of the Bhagavad Gita. But if we just set aside this Mayavad explanation, or for the sake of argument, you even set aside the explanations of the Vaishnavas. Just look at the text of the Gita itself. Look at the text of the Gita itself. Then you understand that the Bhagavad Gita is actually teaching that there is a difference between us and the living and the Supreme Lord. There is a difference between us. There is a permanent, irreducible difference between us and the Supreme Lord, which cannot be sublated even at the point of liberation. That is accepted in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam also. So we understand that these people, they are actually envying the existence of the Lord. Like Madhvacharya says in one place, the greatest crime a citizen can do is to claim to be the government. Suppose I claim to be the king and I claim all the privileges of a king. That is the greatest crime I can do. Similarly, to claim that you are the supreme absolute truth is the greatest crime you can do. So this means you are greatly filled with hatred of the Supreme Lord. Greatly filled with hatred of the Supreme Lord. That is why Prabhupada, he portrays correctly that the Advaitavadins, they are actually envious of the very existence of the Lord. Basically, they don't want to accept the reality that they are ruled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead eternally under all circumstances. Therefore, the Mayavadi explanation of the Gita is a most misleading presentation of the whole truth. Now, most of the editions of Bhagavad Gita are Mayavadi. The vast majority of the editions of Bhagavad Gita are Mayavadi. To actually get a non-Mayavadi Vaishnava edition of Bhagavad Gita, it's very rare. Very rare. Most of them are all Mayavadi. Or worse than that, academic. Lord Chaitanya has forbidden us to read commentations made by the Mayavadis and warns that one who takes to such an understanding of the Mayavadi philosophy loses all power to understand the real mystery of the Gita. So you lose all power to understand the real mystery of the Gita. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. What does this mean? This means, if actually Krishna is non-different from the living entities, if we are all actually Abheda, we are all actually Advaita, all actually one, then why is Krishna wasting his time teaching himself? It's like, for instance, you'll not find any person who is sane, not mad, anunmatta, a person who's not mad, you'll never find him give instructions to his reflections. Will he tell his reflection, "Hey, shut your mouth"? Will he talk to his own reflection? You will find any person who is not mad. Have you ever seen a person who is not mad sitting in front of a reflection and giving orders? "Hey, listen to what I'm saying. Don't argue. Don't talk like me. Listen to me." Will he talk like that? Nobody will do that. Why will he talk to himself? So that is the point here. If individuality refers to the empirical universe, then there is no need of teaching by the Lord. There is no need for Krishna to teach himself. If Arjuna and him are actually one, and all these, and why do they need to witness? They are all the same, no? So there is no need of teaching by the Lord. The plurality of the individual soul and of the Lord is an eternal fact. And it is confirmed by the Vedas as above mentioned. This is the summary. The plurality of the individual soul and of the Lord is an eternal fact, and it is confirmed by the Vedas as above mentioned. That means the individual souls and the Lord are actually different. On the spiritual plane, on the Paramartha plane, not just on the Vyavaharika plane or Pratibhasika plane, they're actually, first of all, we don't even accept these three planes of reality. These are bogus. This three-tier reality is a big imagination, myth created by Shankara. It's not even real. We accept there's only one reality. And the difference is paramarthika. The difference is eternal, unsublatable under all circumstances. Okay, I'll stop here. Because the commentators go in depth and I would like to actually deal with it, but I'll deal with it Monday. This is very, very important. Very important. Because the Acharyas have spent some time on it. Paladev Vidya Bhushan has summarized many of the points made by Ramanuja. And it is important that we understand it. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.